Welcome to the Research Impact podcast series. I'm your host, Dr. John Lombard, Associate Professor in the School of Law and member of the University of Limerick's Research Impact Committee. On today's podcast, I'll be talking to Dr. Ty Kennedy, Associate Professor in the Department of Chemical Sciences, Faculty of Science and Engineering, Bernal Institute, winner of the Early Career Researcher Consolidator Award 2023. Since 2016, TIG has established a well-funded group, securing over 5 million euro in funding. Notably, 2.14 million has been granted directly to TIG as the principal investigator, highlighting the proficiency of his research in his field. The central team of TIG's research revolves around nanostructured materials for high-performance batteries. TIG began his career with some groundbreaking work involving germanium nanowire lithium-ion battery anodes, which exhibited a threefold capacity increase compared to conventional graphite-based anodes. This has garnered significant recognition, evident from its over 400 citations and its distinction within the top 1% in its academic field, according to Web of Science. TIG's current research focus is on the development of nanostructured materials for lithium-ion and sodium-ion batteries. He is coordinator of the Trident project, which has received 3.65 million euro in funding from the Irish government through the Disruptive Technologies Innovation Fund. The goal of the project is to develop a low-cost, high-performance sodium-ion smart battery system for residential energy storage. He is also the PI on a number of other battery-related projects, including a grant from the Sustainable Energy Authority of Ireland for low-cost battery development for grid-scale storage of intermittent renewable energy. Tighe and his team have developed a robust framework for understanding battery performance by performing comprehensive correlation analysis, which has garnered traction in high-quality journals, validating their novel approach. Beyond batteries, Tighe's team collaborates extensively with industry on impedance-based biosensors and polymer nanocomposites for electrical applications. So congratulations on your award, Tig. And for a first question, I wonder if you could explain to us how important is the area of high-performance batteries?
Thanks very much, John. Yeah, so I suppose how important is batteries or is the area of batteries? I think batteries are a very familiar technology to all of us. Mobile electronics play an essential role in all of our lives these days, you know, whether it be your mobile phone or a laptop or, you know, most people have smartwatches these days. Those mobile applications need a power source, and the batteries is the power source for those. And if you're like me, you spend an inordinate amount of time every day worrying about charging your phone or charging your watch or whatever it might be. So I think, you know, batteries, they're very familiar to everybody in modern day life. I think what people maybe are less aware of is the role that batteries can play in the fight against climate change. So batteries in this regard are what I would refer to as a key enabler. So they can play a key role in green technologies such as electric vehicles, where maybe they're not the core technology in an EV, but they're the power source. Okay, so without the battery, the car won't move. So batteries are not only essential in everyday life, but as we move towards a greener society and the transition to renewable energies, batteries will play a key role there. Like I said, the most obvious role in the fight against climate change that batteries will play is the power source for EVs. And I think in the last 5 years in this country, we've made great progress in increasing the number of EVs on the road. We still have a bit to go, but, you know, we are making progress, and the charging infrastructure has progressed well, I would say, in the last 2 or 3 years. And if you want to look at the progress that has been made, it's useful to compare the ranges of electric vehicles down through the years. So if you go back to 2010, when the Nissan Leaf was first commercially made available, it was the first mainstream electric vehicle that was on the market. The range of that in 2010 was 160 kilometers, and that was being generous. That's if you drove it around the city like you were driving Miss Daisy and you didn't go on the motorway. So that was the absolute max limit of the range, 160 kilometers. If you look at what an EV on the road today can do, you know, the upmarket ones like a Tesla Model S can do in excess of 600 kilometers. maybe less upmarket one, but you know, a common one on the road today is a Volkswagen ID4, can do in excess of 500 kilometers. So those types of ranges are more than enough for everybody in their day-to-day lives, I would say. For 99% of people, you're not going to be driving more than 500 kilometers every day. So if you look at the progress that has been made there in terms of range, so this, it's almost quadrupled in, you know, 15 years. All of that has been driven by progress in battery development, basically, and in materials development for more advanced lithium ion batteries. So the importance of batteries, I think, is probably obvious when you look at, you know, decarbonization of the transport sector. The battery is a key enabler of that. Probably what's less obvious, if we're talking about the green transition, is the role that batteries can play as we transition to electricity grid dominated by renewable energy. And ultimately what we want to get to is 100% renewable energy supplied grid. Renewable energy is great. Obviously, it's a clean energy. The issue with it is that it's inherently intermittent. So if you look at wind and solar, the two, you know, most common renewable energy sources that we have, the wind doesn't always blow, the sun doesn't always shine. So if you have 100% renewable energy supply grid, then what happens when people come home during peak times, 5 p.m. to 7 p.m., come home from work, put on the dinner, boil the kettle, have a shower. And if the wind isn't blowing outside, then, you know, clearly they're not going to have electricity supply. Converse situation to that is at night, maybe the wind is blowing, everybody's in bed, nobody's using the electricity. What happens to that? At the moment, it's curtailed, it's effectively wasted. So as we move towards this renewable energy dominated grid, we're going to have to incorporate storage. And storage can alleviate those problems that I just mentioned. And one of the most effective means of storage is the battery. So ultimately, as we transition to a greener electricity supply, then we're going to have to incorporate large-scale storage and ultimately large-scale batteries. So what we want in that respect is, you know, we want batteries that are very sustainable, using sustainable materials. We want them to be low cost, and we want them to have long cycle lives. So we want them to be able to last 15, 20, 25 years without having to be replaced. So I think, you know, that type of storage is what we would classify as stationary storage. Whereas, you know, for EVs, you want something that's high energy density. So that would be lithium-based batteries, because those are mobile. You want them to be as light as possible. So I think, yeah, if we're talking about the importance of batteries, I think, you know, everyday to day life, very important. But, you know, for combating climate change also, I think will be a key enabler, as I said.
Very good. And with that, I suppose, bringing it back to your own research focus, then, could you outline the particular issues which you and your team are exploring in this area?
Yes. So what my research group, the primary focus of my research group is on the development of sustainable batteries. So if you look at the battery market now currently, lithium ion batteries are the dominant technology, and for good reason. They have really high energy density. So for mobile applications, like I was saying, lithium ion batteries will always be the go-to technology, because lithium, if you look at the periodic table, it's number 3, which means it's very light. Okay. And that's what you want in terms of a battery. If you're going to use materials, you want them to be light, so it makes the battery smaller. But with lithium ion batteries, there are a number of concerns that would be surrounding the sustainability of the chemistry and the supply chain. Okay, so lithium reserves are limited. Lithium is on the critical raw materials list. So it's not a very abundant element, which is an issue. So to give you an example, there's about 8 kilos of lithium in an EV battery. If we're to move to a transport sector with 100% EVs, and there's about 1.5 billion cars on the road today, so we're going to need 1.5 billion EVs times 8 kgs, you're talking 12 billion kilos of lithium. Okay. Now, we do have enough reserves to meet that. But the issue is lithium mining itself is not a very sustainable process, and it's slow. So one of the main ways we get lithium out of the ground now is through extraction from brines. So a brine is they're underground lakes in South America that are saturated with lithium salts. So saturated water with salt is known as a brine. So how they get the lithium out is they pump that water to the surface and they evaporate it off. And For every ton of lithium carbonate that's produced or lithium precursor that's produced, they have to evaporate off about 500,000 liters of water. So clearly that's not a sustainable process. So as we move forward and as the demand for batteries is, it's only going to grow. So they're predicting its demand for batteries is going to grow tenfold in the next 10 years. Majority of those will be for EVs, but also a big proportion will be for the stationary storage applications that I was talking about. So given that lithium mining or lithium reserves are limited and lithium mining is not that sustainable, there's a demand now, or there's a need to develop more sustainable batteries. And that's what my research group, the current focus is on, the development of a sodium ion battery technology, which is much more sustainable. The energy density is not quite as high as lithium and never will be, because sodium is a heavier element than lithium. But that doesn't matter if you're using it for stationary storage. Okay, so if the battery is 20%, 25% bigger, it doesn't matter, because it's going to be sitting in a field somewhere. You don't have to move it around. You know, it's just going to be sitting in the same place for the duration of its life, storing renewable energy and giving it back to the grid when needed. So that's my research group's focus currently. The chemistry of sodium ion batteries, to talk about that maybe for a little bit. So like I said, sodium, it's in the same group as lithium. It's one row down, which just means it's a heavier element, but it also means it has a very similar chemistry. So it's in group one, which is the alkali metals. That means a lot of what applies to a lithium ion battery will apply to a sodium ion battery as well. So it's what we would call a drop-in technology, in that you can take existing lithium ion battery manufacturing processes and you can apply those to sodium ion battery processes. The difference is, to make a sodium ion battery, you need clearly sodium, but also other kind of abundant sustainable elements at the cathode. If we just talk about sodium for a second, like, I mean, sodium is one of the most, you know, ubiquitous elements around, you know, so everybody in Ireland has a container of sodium on their dinner table at home. Okay, so in the form of sodium chloride, which is table salt. Sodium is abundant in the oceans. It's everywhere. That's a big contrast to lithium. So there'll never be a supply chain issue with sodium. At the cathode, you can use a brief explainer on what a battery, or how a battery operates. So you have two electrodes, you have an anode and you have a cathode. Those are separated by a liquid electrolyte that's soaked in a polymer separator. So the anode, you can use hard carbon for sodium ion batteries. And at the cathode, you can use, there's a number of different compounds that you can use, but they all have really, really abundant elements. So you can have something like Prussian white, which has iron and carbon in there, very abundant. You can have materials that we're working with, sodium iron sulfates, which have sodium, iron, sulfur and oxygen, again, all really, really abundant elements. So that's our focus now currently. What we're trying to do is we're trying to develop these sodium ion batteries such that we're trying to maximize the energy density, but that's not that's very important to us, but it's not the most important thing. I think the most important thing for us is that it's made using sustainable processes. And not that we beat the energy density of lithium ion batteries, but we, you know, maximize our energy density, but also that we really maximize the cycle life. Okay, so we want to be reaching minimum 5,000 cycles with these, because, as I said, they'll be expected to operate for 15, 20, maybe 25 years. So that is a key property that we'll be looking at, or that we do look at.
And in what you've said up to this point, you've highlighted, I suppose, a range of factors that arise in the area of high-performance batteries. You've highlighted the various areas that they're used in, where it's transport, energy storage, environmental considerations, even, I suppose, from my own area, thinking about, you know, human rights implications associated with the development of some of these batteries. So it seems if there's multiple ways into this particular topic. So how exactly did this research focus come about for you, for your team, and how has it evolved over time?
Yeah, so I suppose, how did I start into sodium ion batteries? I suppose it kind of happened organically, really. So my PhD was on the development of silicon-based nanostructured anodes for lithium ion batteries. So to give you a little bit of background to that, it's in a lithium ion battery, the anode is graphite. So it's graphite is just a layered carbon material. So that's in a conventional lithium ion battery that you have in your phone or your watch or your laptop. And that works really well, has a long cycle life, but the capacity is quite limited. So if you swap out graphite with silicon, you can actually increase the capacity tenfold. The issue is, and there's always an issue when you get big advances like that, is that when you actually charge silicon, there's a massive volume expansion. So between 300 and 400% volume expansion. That causes the material to pulverize and break and basically leads to very poor capacity retention. So you get a battery that will last maybe 20 cycles if you use bulk silicon, which is good to nobody. During my PhD, I looked at developing nanostructured silicon, which can overcome, their volume still expands, but they don't pulverize. So they're a much more robust material. And we were able to extend the cycle life of silicon to, you know, hundreds of cycles. And we looked at germanium as well, where we were able to get thousands of cycles. So that was my focus during my PhD. As I was coming towards the end of my PhD, obviously I was doing a lot of reading of journal articles about silicon and germanium. I came across a paper in Nanoletters, was the name of the journal, which was a first principle study on how you could use silicon and germanium or germanium in sodium ion batteries if they were amorphous. So an amorphous material is something, it's a solid material, but the atoms are arranged randomly, basically. Whereas in contrast to a crystalline material where the atoms are arranged in fixed lattice points, you know, and wherever you look in the structure, the arrangement will be the same. Okay, so this paper described how you could use amorphous silicon and germanium as a sodium ion anode. So it really piqued my interest in sodium ion batteries. I was coming towards the end of my PhD, as I said, so I didn't have time to do the research, but it kind of sparked something in me. And I began to read more and more about sodium ion batteries and how they could be applied as, you know, for stationary storage applications, how they would be ideal for that. So once I got my academic position and I was looking to start my own research group, I think it was something that was a very natural choice for me to start focusing on sodium ion batteries and to see if we could, you know, do something innovative, albeit whether it be with nanostructured materials, or I've since moved on to carbonaceous materials and cathode materials as well. So once I got my academic position, obviously I was looking for research funding, and my first major research grant was funded by the Sustainable Energy Authority of Ireland, and it was on the development of sodium ion batteries for stationary storage applications for grid scale stationary storage. And we were looking at tin based anodes. That project is coming to an end now. That kind of led into the Trident project, which you mentioned in the introduction. So, and that's my major focus at the moment, is the Trident project, which was funded through the Disruptive Technology Innovation Fund. And that's it's a large scale collaborative project. We have 8 partners in total. So 2 RPOs, UL and Tyndall. We have 1 multinational, which is Analog Devices, based here in Limerick. And we have 5 SMEs. So we have Glantro down in Cork, a material science company, M Semicon and ICER-G, which are both electronic engineering companies. We have M Power in Dublin that are an energy company, and Tisa Labs in Cork that are a software company. So that project is basically, it's to develop the sodium ion battery chemistry that we're working on in the laboratory, and to apply that for domestic storage of electricity. So we envisage the sodium ion battery being just another white good that you have in your utility room, where it sits alongside your washing machine and your tumble dryer. And you use it to store, if you have solar panels, you use it to store the solar energy. You know, maybe you're at work and the sun is shining, you use the battery to store that energy, and you use the energy then when you come home. Alternatively, we can charge it from the grid in times of low demand. So in the middle of the night, for example, when electricity is cheap, you can charge up this Trident battery, and then you can sell it back to the grid when demand is very high, okay, and the grid actually needs it. So the name Trident came about through that there's 3 kind of prongs to the research. So that's how we pitched it. So one is on the development of the chemistry, which is what we're doing in UL in collaboration with Glantro, the company in Cork, the material science company in Cork. Then there is the other aspect, is the how do you couple that battery to the grid you know, how do you allow that battery to partake in grid services? So you're going to need software, and there's going to be regulatory issues there as well. And then the middle part is how you get the hardware and the software in the middle so that the grid can talk to the battery. And, you know, we're doing the chemistry piece, and then our partners are doing those other two prongs, the hardware and software, and the grid services part as well. So that was the journey, I suppose, that my research group has taken in sodium-ion battery development.
You mentioned the Trident project in that section. Could you expand a little bit on the chemistry that you're developing as part of this?
Okay, so yeah, it's a sodium-ion battery, and we have at the anode is a very sustainable material. So all sodium-ion batteries are, you know, any sodium-ion batteries being developed currently generally have hard carbon as their anode. So hard carbon is a non-graphitizable carbon, basically. What we're doing is we're using a very sustainable source, lignin, and this is in collaboration with Professor Morris Collins in the School of Engineering. So Morris has developed a really innovative approach to turning lignin into hard carbon. And lignin, to give you the background to that, lignin is a waste product from many, it's a component of trees, and it's a major waste product from paper manufacturing. So about 50 million tons of lignin is produced per annum in Europe, and it's a waste product basically. So Mars can actually take that lignin and turn it into nanofibers. Okay, and what we're doing is we're taking Mars's nanofibers, modifying them further, and using them as the anode material, directly as the anode material in the Trident sodium ion battery. We're also synthesizing a novel cathode material in the laboratory as well, based, it's sodium iron sulfate is the name of the compound. So we're, you know, basically using solid state synthesis. The precursors are iron sulfate and sodium sulfate. Both are very, very abundant. Iron sulfate is a byproduct from steel manufacturing, for example. So again, you know, quite sustainable precursors. And then we're working with Glantro on the development of the separator, where we're taking separators that can be used in lithium ion batteries and are produced at scale. They don't work with sodium ion battery electrolytes, but we're modifying them using silica particles produced by Glantro such that they can be compatible with sodium ion battery electrolytes. So that's what we're doing. And, you know, again, the focus really is on making sure that every material that we use is, you know, really abundant and is sustainable.
So Tyke, you've mentioned the influence, I suppose, of some of the funding bodies and industry partners in your research. And I wonder if you could speak to this a little bit more about how they've contributed to the development of your research over time.
Yeah, so I suppose my research, you know, it's experimental research, and it does require significant funding to carry it out. So without funding agencies, it just wouldn't be possible. You know, the three main funding agencies that I've had the majority of my success with are Sustainable Energy Authority of Ireland, which I've mentioned, Science Foundation Ireland, and Enterprise Ireland. So I've had a number of grants with those funding agencies. So SEAI, most people are very familiar with them. They offer a lot of grants for home upgrades, make your home more energy efficient. What people don't probably know is that they actually do fund fundamental research as well for materials that have the potential to make breakthroughs in energy applications like batteries. They've been a very valuable source of funding to me, and just had a research grant kicking off with them just this month again on the development of materials for batteries as well. SFI, through the centres of two projects, one with Amber, one with Mare. So MARAI are the SFI Research Centre for Energy, Climate and Marine Research, and AMBER are the SFI Research Centre for Advanced Materials and Bioengineering Research. You know, they have been really good as well. They offer really good supports. They offer access to principal investigators with expertise in Ireland beyond the scope of my expertise, but still that we can collaborate with. And, you know, we're often pursuing very similar goals. So the involvement in the centres offers a lot of collaboration opportunities, which is very beneficial, I would say. And then with Enterprise Ireland, I've had a couple of grants, and they're really good because they allow academics to collaborate with industry in a really meaningful way, I would say. So I've had a couple of grants with Analog Devices, who I've mentioned, and one with Glantro, who I've mentioned as well. And through engaging with EI, you know, you can get substantial projects off the ground, and they give a lot of support, not just in funding, but in you know, network building as well. So like I said, you know, without those funding agencies, my research wouldn't be possible. The main reason for that is, first and foremost, is that funding allows us to hire really talented, innovative people. And when you're doing experimental research, you know, you need people in the lab, you need people to run the experiments, you need people to come up with ideas, how to tweak things and so on. So that's the most important kind of use of any of the funding I've gotten is on the hiring of people. And I should shout out to my research group. We've 8 people now currently, and they're super talented and super engaged and very enthusiastic. And, you know, without them, I think the train doesn't leave the station. So secondly, then, I suppose with experimental research, you need consumables, you need PPE, you need to purchase all that. So that's, you know, probably the next most important thing. And then with our work in particular, because we're making a lot of new materials, novel materials, you know, with new synthesis methods, we need to be able to characterize our materials as well. So we need to make sure what we think we made, we actually did make. And to do that, we need to avail of very advanced characterization techniques like electron microscopy, spectroscopy, and so on. And all that costs money as well. So, you know, the funding is key really to all of that.
Tadhg, your research really exemplifies UL's excellent and impactful research tackling real world problems. In this respect, could you describe the impact of your research for the listener?
Well, I suppose maybe if I take the question, if I look back at the end of my career, maybe in 20 or 25 years, what would I like to have achieved, and what do I think the impact can be? I think what I'd really like is that, you know, the materials breakthroughs that we're making in our lab, that they would be incorporated into commercial batteries that are truly sustainable, you know, sustainable in every aspect. And we're making ground in like I said, in the anode, the cathode, and the separator. So that's always the goal. And I think that's the impact that the research we are doing can have. So we really do want to alleviate these supply chain issues and make, you know, this large grid scale battery a reality. Collectively, as a research community, I think talking, because I think the problems are too large, I guess, for one group to tackle on their own. But collectively, as a research community, what I would hope that battery researchers in general, the impact that we can have is, you know, to be a key contributor to the fight against climate change. And certainly, you know, if you look at the research that's going on in UL alone, I think definitely we have the capabilities to do that. And whether that's being, you know, smoothing the transition to the 100% EV transport sector, or whether it's, you know, smoothing the transition to the renewable energy dominated sector, you know, batteries, we will have a major impact in that, I think.
Tadhg, you mentioned in your close engagement with colleagues on research and being part of a community of research here within the university. And as part of that, I wonder if you could describe how the University of Limerick has supported you on your research journey.
Yeah, certainly. So I suppose I'm a child of UL, if you want to put it that way. I've been here since 2006. I did my undergraduate degree here. I studied pharmaceutical and industrial chemistry in the CS department. I did my PhD here. I was lucky enough to get a lecturing position straight from my PhD. And yeah, so I got tenure then a couple of years after that. I've been here for all my professional career. So in terms of support in my research journey, well, without UL, I think Ty Kennedy, the PI, does not exist. So I've received major support along the way in everything I've tried here. So to go back to my undergraduate degree, it was in chemistry, pharmaceutical and industrial chemistry, but my first taste of research was in my final year project. And that's where I got the love for it. And Seamus McMonagall was my supervisor at the time. I remember he's since retired, but he gave me great support. And it was on a reactor design to convert carbon dioxide and hydrogen into a sustainable fuel. So that gave me the bug. Went into doing a PhD with Kevin Ryan on battery development. And straight from that, yeah, Tony Pembroke, who was the head of department in the chemical sciences department, or chemical and environmental science department as it was at the time, gave me an opportunity. He must have saw something in me, or I don't know what, but he gave me an opportunity straight from my PhD to start lecturing. And I took that opportunity. And yeah, since then have had the pleasure of working with three great heads of departments. So Tony being one, Tufik Sulaimane being the last one, and now JJ Leahy. And the three of those have been very, very supportive, unbelievably supportive in everything I've tried to do or wanted to do in research, you know, so they've always been supportive in that. If we look at the research office here as well, again, anytime I've been writing a proposal, anytime I've looked for support, it's always there. They're always very encouraging, no matter what the topic that I'm writing around, you know, that they're always supportive. And maybe sometimes they can't give technical support based on, you know, the actual research work itself, but where they can certainly give support is on aspects like, you know, how do you write in proper dissemination into a proposal? You know, what are reviewers looking for? Do you get great advice from the research office here? So again, always been very supportive as long as I've been here. And then lastly, I suppose my lab is situated in the Bernal Institute. And the Bernal Institute, I think, is, you know, has world-class facilities, you know, to rival any research institute, any material science research institute in the world, I think. So for us and for my group and my PhD students and postdocs, the research that, because we're situated in the Bernal, basically what can happen is we're making new materials, so we do need to check what they are all the time. So my group can make a material in the morning, they can take it down to an electron microscope in the afternoon and verify exactly what they've done. And that's not common for institutes across the world, you know. And not only that, they're trained up on the instruments themselves as well. So not only, you know, it really accelerates the research process, and it's great career development for my group as well, because they get this on the end of their CV. They can use electron microscope and X-ray diffraction equipment, spectroscopy equipment, and so on. So access to that type of infrastructure is invaluable to the research. So it's another support here that is, you know, I think, you know, it's a world-class university we have here, and I think we shouldn't be ashamed in saying that. So, yeah, like I said, without UL, I think Ty Kennedy, the PI, doesn't exist. So,
very good. Over the course of our conversation, I suppose I've been really impressed by the way you've spoken with such passion about your research and about ideas in general. So what is it that drives your curiosity or motivates your research interests?
Yeah, so in terms of curiosity, I suppose I've always had a love for science since I started studying science formally back in first year in secondary school. And it was chemistry I always gravitated towards. And really, it was kind of trying, you know, understanding how materials interact with each other on an atomic scale. That's what has always fascinated me. And I've always been curious about, and still am to this day. And that was the main reason why I wanted a career in research, because you can basically do that for a living. And that's what I do. So that's kind of what I'm curious about, and I think always will be curious about. In terms of motivation, I suppose, as I've gotten older and I've had kids, I think, you know, it's fine to be curious about things, but, you know, you have to try and make an impact too. And I think, you know, climate change, I've mentioned a few times, but it's the biggest existential threat we have currently facing our society. And I mentioned having kids. So, you know, my oldest boy now, I have three boys. My oldest boy is six. And I think since he was born, I was kind of worried, you know, wondering what kind of world are we going to leave behind for these boys now. So what motivates me now is that, you know, can I take everything I've learned over the last 15, 20 years and now apply it to make an impact in the world, albeit a small one maybe, but some impact. And that's why everything I do now, you know, every kind of new project I'm thinking about, or, you know, every new proposal I'm writing, I want sustainability to be at the core of it. And, you know, whatever technology we're developing should, you know, should have an impact in fighting against climate change, like I said, however small that impact might be, but at least that we're striving towards that.
To follow on from, I suppose, those themes of aging to some degree, are there particular research questions, challenges that you want to tackle in the coming years? You mentioned this focus on sustainability, but are there specific questions that you want to look at within the context of high performance batteries?
I think there's a ton of them. Maybe I'll use this opportunity to wave the flag for battery research in UL in general, because it's not just me that's looking at battery development in UL. I have a number of very talented colleagues in the chemical sciences department also looking at battery chemistry development. So Kevin Ryan, Hugh Ganey, Shalini Singh, Dave McNulty, all working on a range of different chemistries. So battery research, it's a broad canvas, I think. And there's not just, you know, it's not just lithium ion and sodium ion. There's a broad range of battery chemistries being developed. And I think the battery landscape in 10, 15 years will be much more diverse. And, you know, some of the research that me and my colleagues are doing in the department is based on, you know, you have Dave McNulty looking at lithium sulfur batteries, for example, that are, you know, could be the next big leap forward in terms of energy density, you know, could maybe double the energy density of a lithium ion battery if it comes to fruition. Lithium metal batteries as well. Hugh Ganey's working on those. Kevin Ryan's working on advanced lithium ion batteries as well, and potassium ion batteries. So, you know, in terms of where we're going, and I collaborate with all of those on some of those projects as well. So in terms of where we're going, you know, we're all heading in the same direction, but, you know, maybe just at slightly different angles, I think. The future is bright, I think, in terms of where we're going. Personally, I think my focus will remain on sodium ion batteries for the foreseeable future. I think what I'd like to try to do maybe is as the next step is to look at sodium metal batteries. So a sodium metal battery is where you use sodium metal as the anode rather than hard carbon. You use sodium metal and you can actually get a huge increase in the energy density. So you actually would get energy densities to rival lithium ion batteries then if we could solve that problem. But there's a number of technical issues associated with that. But I think that's a question I would like to start tackling in the nearby future. And also recently in the last 6 or 8 months, I've become very interested in Maxine synthesis. So Maxines are two-dimensional materials with a host of really interesting properties in terms of their conductivity and their surface chemistry. And they can be applied not only in batteries, but in things like capacitors, sensors for catalysis as well. So they have a broad range of applications. The problem with Maxines is that the synthesis method is not very sustainable. So it uses HF, which is hydrofluoric acid, to synthesize it currently, which is a really, really nasty material. And if it doesn't use HF, it uses fluorine-containing solvents, which again are quite nasty. So what I would like to do and what we are doing, I have a postdoc working on this currently and one starting this year, is to look at solvent-free approaches to developing Maxines and see if we can apply those in batteries and maybe, who knows, down the line in those other applications that I mentioned.
Many thanks for your time today, Tadhg. Your work truly exemplifies research excellence with impact. You have been listening to Dr. Tadhg Kennedy, Associate Professor in the Department of Chemical Sciences, Faculty of Science and Engineering, Brunel Institute, winner of the Early Career Researcher Consolidator Award of 2023. This research has been supported by the Science Foundation Ireland, Irish Research Council, Disruptive Technology Innovation Fund, Enterprise Ireland, Sustainable Energy Authority of Ireland, and European Commission Horizon Europe. If you would like to hear more about research impact at the University of Limerick, please go to our website, ul.ie/research. Thank you for listening.